Welcome back to episode 2 of the Yet to Be Named podcast. I am Jarell, and I am joined by 3 wonderful guests tonight. And we'll go around and just give brief introductions right quick.
Thanks, Jarell. I'm Adam, the current president of Blue Max Leather Club in St. Louis. And today we're going to be talking about pups. And we're here with
Ed
and Pup Cerberus, also known as Zach.
Oh, wait, I forgot to give my pup name, Puffaluffagus.
Puffaluffagus.
Yes.
I love it. I have to admit, I did a little bit of research before this afternoon when I knew what we'd be talking about. So I ran across 2 different things, like pup play and puppy play. Like, what is the preferred name here for it? So are we pup play?
I've heard people pupping out, so I think pup play would be pretty good.
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay.
Yeah, it's I guess that's better than like dog play.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, so a pup, yes.
For the uninitiated, what would be the basics of pup play? Like, what exactly is it?
So yeah, pup play is kind of the act of embodying a animal of some kind, usually a puppy, and being in the scenario with a handler or alpha, depending on who this person also portrays as. This is very similar to how we might interpret, you know, a slave and a dom, or a daddy and a boy, I guess, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, I think of it as a way as kind of like a headspace where you can not be in reality per se, but you can be like a playful pet, you know, as a pup, playful and energetic, and you can almost be yourself without the restrictions of this pre-confined notion of who you must be. And I like to say that, you know, there's a lot of pups. I think there's 2 school of thoughts that some people say that if you're a pup, that you must have kind of like a handler. And then there's a lot of pups who like to just be independent.
Kind of on the greater kink umbrella. So I kind of relate that to, like Pup Cerberus said, that kind of like there's generally like a dom and a subtype, so the handler kind of fits that niche with the pup, so they can kind of like watch out for them as they play, just make sure that they're, you know, not getting too unruly and stuff like that. But like I said, also I've seen tons of pups that just enjoy it without having a handler, and I think both are pretty valid.
So it's a new one to me. So I think the question I came away with it is there's always a little bit of a discovery phase with figuring out that, you know, like this is a thing for me. Like, what exactly did that process look like for y'all?
So in terms of discovering it, for me, I kind of discovered it in the winter of 2018. I'd recently gotten out of a sir-boy relationship and was just kind of looking to explore something else. And at that time, I didn't like the idea of being a submissive boy. And I felt that being a pup could really help out with that. Because at the same time, you don't have to be this submissive boy. You can be, you know, a little bit more of a brat. You can be more of a energetic animal. Whereas you also find that it's more of a headspace to be in. And my first experience happened to, you know, include a lot of bondage, which is another very fascinating thing that I enjoy. So being able to be tied up, being in a kennel, but also still being this headspace where, you know, I'm basically being a pup, it really brought something out that nothing I had experienced before.
And so for me, I think my journey and the journey still continuing, it was a little bit different. I went to IML, which is International Man or Men of Leather. So you can think of it as kind of like a beauty contest, but people are wearing leather and strutting around in jock straps. So while at IML, which is kind of like a weekend in Chicago, every Memorial Day weekend, they were pups, and some of these pups had tails. They were kind of like were insertable, where it fit into their backside, and I thought it was the cutest thing. I really did. I was just like, oh my gosh. I just become just fascinated with these little pups with the little tails and the way that they can move. They can wag the tail, and then they have the hoods on, and I fell in love with it. I fell in love with just the idea that you were transported, well, the people who were pups seemed to have transported into a self where they were just extremely happy. They weren't worried about the confines of the world. Some of them had handlers, so if they were, you know, pupping around, they had someone to watch over them to see were they in a safe space or make sure no harm came to them. And I found just the idea to be liberating.
So, Zach, I see you have brought some of the gear. So for the folks who weren't lucky enough to be in the room with us right now, could you describe a little bit what you have in your hands?
Yeah, so starting off, I have the probably number one piece of gear that most pups already have, and that is a pup hood. You can find these almost anywhere, really. Amazon, eBay, Etsy, or some more well-known places like Mr. S Leather. This typically is the number one thing that gets most pups into that headspace, just because it's something that covers up their entire head. It also kind of limits their vision a little bit, and that can make the biggest difference from what I've experienced. I do also have a pup tail. This is not an insertable one, so if you haven't seen an insertable one, I'm sure you can find one very easily. But this is one that would go on a belt, so if you're walking around like on a street, or if you were walking in an event and you couldn't necessarily be completely nude, this would be an alternative to a plug tail. This would just attach you a belt loop of some kind, or a belt.
A lot of people call that the show tail. And a perk of that is when you're at an event or at the bar, people would touch it and play with it. And if that's inserted into you, you don't really want that going on. So a lot of people switch over to the show tail so that they're protecting themselves.
I can contest that going out wearing the insertable, that you do sometimes have people who would pull or tug on it without consent. And that is not that fun for someone to pull out your insertable in a public place.
Yeah. So the tail actually it's red and it actually wags. So like you can swing this thing back and forth and it's like a very realistic looking.
That's what I totally love about it. It fascinates me. I'm in zen at this point seeing Zach move his tail
just wiggle
forth.
It around just, a little bit
just wiggling it around a little bit. It really does something for me.
What other gear do you have?
Yeah, so going off, something that would be very beneficial to have in say a mosh would be a pair of gloves and knee pads. For obvious reasons, having knee pads, if you're going to be crawling around the floor, having some sort of protection makes a big difference. Again, there's numerous places to find these. The particular pair I'm holding is the ones from Fourth Trough. Obviously, I've said a lot of brand names, but the next piece of gear you can find at almost any sporting goods store. This is a pair of boxing gloves or MMA fighting gloves. I'm not quite sure their exact frame, but they are by Centrium. They're padded on the fingertips, so whenever you are on the ground and you're holding it onto your hands, it does make it a little bit easier on your wrists and on your hands, so you're not, you know, punching bare ground. Granted, most, if not all, pup mosh sessions I've been to have always been on some sort of foam board. But usually having this does make a little bit more of an impact. The last few pieces of gear I have include a singlet, which again, something that's just for fun. You don't necessarily need to have this, but it definitely does help out, especially at events like IML, MAL, or somewhere where you just want to wear less clothing. And finally, this is a neckerchief that I have. A lot of pups have these types of things. The one that makes this one stand out special, it's from Mr. S, by the way, is it has a zipper on the back.
Ooh.
I've never found pup gear that has pockets. So having pockets makes the biggest difference in the world.
So this is like the thing where people brag about their dresses having pockets. This is the same thing now. The pup gear also has pockets.
Definitely, it makes a big difference. I understand the struggle now of not having pockets, especially when walking around a convention floor where you don't have access to your cell phone or your wallet.
Yeah, if I'm wearing high boots, I usually will have to stick stuff in the boot or stick stuff in the jock strap. I've learned that money under the testicles. Actually, that's sometimes where I keep my cash. But since, you know, the area of social distancing, I don't have that problem as much now.
So is there any other gear that would typically be used in pup play, or are those really the like major pieces?
I prefer kind of like the insertable in a jock strap But I'm really a huge fan of jockstraps, so it's any place I could wear one, I try to wear one. But yeah, the cash, or you know, just having a wallet is very, very convenient, which I think I may need to get one of those. That is, I love this idea.
Yeah. One other thing that I don't have, unfortunately, is a collar and leash. I personally have not gone into yet just because I don't have a handler or an alpha yet. I don't have a need for a collar right now, but that is something that I can definitely pick up down the line if I needed to. I would say some type of play toy, such as like bones or stuff that you can hit or like mess around with that won't really cause damage. I know a lot of moshes have pup toys that you can actually play with. You can throw around, you can stomp and make squeaky noises, and that can really be a big interactive moment, especially with crowds.
Yeah, so speaking of moshes, Bluemix has put on multiple puppy moshes for our fetish nights and other events. Would you like to describe those in a little bit more detail?
Yeah, absolutely. So being in a pup mosh, you really do get a source of community because there are other pups there, and being able to interact with someone without actually having to verbally speak to someone is very liberating, I would say. You don't necessarily know who they are until afterwards, so it's kind of that mysterious, like, oh, who are they? A fun example, earlier this year before the pandemic, I went to MAL and they had a huge mosh there. And one time I was playing with this guy and we were just having fun in a public area, so we weren't doing anything too, shall I say, inappropriate. But one guy that I had was messing around with turned out to be a very big Instagram influencer.
As part of the club, when we put the pup moshes on, we like to make sure that all the pups are taken care of. So we generally have those foam mats, and then we put foam on all the corners around the JJ's dance floor. And then we actually assign people to look after the pups while they're playing, just so, because sometimes the back bar gets a little hot, so we just want to make sure everybody's staying hydrated and getting treats and just having a ball. Literally.
Yes, and the Scooby Snacks of animal crackers, I believe those are provided as well, and they taste really, really good.
I can contest, yes, they do.
So I actually want to backtrack for a second. So when, you know, we're thinking about, you actually have your names as well. What meaning was behind that, and what was the process? Like, how early on was that in the journey, that this entire journey, that came out?
Well, I took a road trip and shared a hotel room of three wonderful men during IML. And during that road trip, we came up with that pup name. So for me, it was kind of like a community, like Hillary Clinton. It takes a community. So that's how I became Pupilophagus.
Yeah, and for me, it was kind of just texting a few friends of mine, and we were all just joking around with different names because I still was unassigned to a pup. At one point, I was going to be called something like Macintosh because I'm a huge Apple nerd, but someone brought up the name Cerberus, and I felt more guided towards that, partially because I have a huge background in the horror Halloween industry, and Cerberus, for those of you who don't know, is the hell dog guardian of the underworld, so it's a three-headed dog. But it is still a great conversation piece as to, you know, why I chose the name Cerberus.
So do most pups get their names by, I guess, an inside meeting, or is it assigned by a handler?
It kind of just depends. Unfortunately, there's no underground meeting that we all have, but we do definitely kind of distinguish different names and kind of come up with different creative versions of the names. Sometimes they are assigned if you are in a sort of pup handler relationship, but sometimes if you're an independent pup or if you're just starting out, you typically choose your own name.
So what you identify with, like a individual breed of dog, or how specific do these get?
And some people really do identify with a particular breed of dog. I'm horrible with breeds of dogs, so I have not researched which type of dog or breed of dog would match my personality, so I don't know per se.
Unfortunately, I don't really have a breeder dog either that I die with.
We both are breedless. We've never been bred.
Well, that's a different type of breed.
Oh, I think that's a totally different subject. Okay, all right. So I guess we're
breedless.
Breedless.
Yeah, Unfortunately, I've just never really come across that. Although most friends of mine say that I'm a yupper dog, when in reality I'm like, no, that's definitely not me.
Is a yupper dog one of those little dogs that keep on yupping? And
oh, absolutely. That you just want to punt across the room.
No, I don't think that's you. I don't think that's you.
Well, thank you.
So, could you tell me a little bit more about your actual puppy headspace? So, what does that look like when you... Because, Zach, you mentioned putting on the hood and how it helps immerse you into the whole mindset and scene. Like, what exactly... How else does that... How does that look for both of you?
For me, it's an escape from reality. So, being in that pup space, which I'm still learning how to do, it's more just an escapism, and you can be whatever you want, and no judgment. I think sometimes the people, especially in a leather community, and I think I'm going to say this with take this with a grain of salt, that I think a lot of the older people in the leather community, at least when I first started in the leather community, it was that you had to dress a certain way. You have to, if you wore this color, that meant that you were definitely into this, and it was all these rules. And I think that's what's so kind of liberating about the pup community, that there's really not any rules. And just being in that headspace, I find it just freeing.
Yeah, and I would agree. It's kind of a very relaxed state of mind, almost like a meditation, I would say. You don't really have a lot of rules to follow, other than if you have a handler, they're probably the only one that's giving you guidance. But for the most part, though, it definitely has a sort of like Zen mode to it. And there's really no easy way to describe it. Especially like when I first got started out, how I immediately went to pup headspace was to have fist mitts put on to where I couldn't use my hands at all. And that made a huge difference.
Ooh. I really kind of want to try that. I don't have any mitts.
You can just use Saran Wrap.
So, has pup play kind of come out in your day-to-day life in any ways? Do you find sometimes you might be just out in public and it might just, like, strike you out of nowhere? Has that ever happened?
I would say, especially if I see another pup, like an actual dog, I immediately go, there's another dog right there. I just want to pet him. But I would say besides that, mainly like in text messages, whenever I'm texting friends of mine, I might say like wolf or whatever towards them, but not really. But at the same time though, I have a very professional lifestyle that I have to follow, so I can't obviously be crawling around the floor, you know, barking at my coworkers saying the word bark over and over again.
For me, with the pandemic, I have not really been in public that much. That I even know what being in public is. It's like going really to Costco and then coming back home. It has not bled over, but it's not. I really haven't had that opportunity.
Have either of you been in a puppy pack with others, or part of a alpha beta type situation with others?
I would say my last relationship, I was definitely in a sort of pup pack, although I wasn't officially a member. My ex-boyfriend at the time, who is in fact a pup, was in a pup pack filled with other puppies. Mainly there was an alpha and the rest were all just normal pups, so there was kind of that dynamic, but there was no one set person in charge other than that one alpha.
I think that would be so cool to be in a puppy pack.
It is kind of fun because you're all there for, like, you're all there with one intention, and a benefit of pup play, I would say, is you become more friendly with other people, especially strangers.
Wow.
So that community of puppies just providing that support for each other, and then obviously the play involved, just getting involved with each other and pupping out.
So much of the focus on and within the pup and handler community seems to be towards pups and not handlers, and that ratio seems very one-sided. How do you all feel about this?
Is it more kind of like, you know, there's always too many bottoms and not enough tops?
I would say yes to that. And that's where, thankfully, alphas do kind of take over that handler role, to where you do have sort of that top quote but I would say there is a lot more heavy sided towards pups, as in like bottoms who are looking for tops.
And I'm not saying that all not all pups are bottoms by any means.
I would agree. Yeah. Okay. Not all pups are bottoms.
So a lot of one of the things that I did run across as I was researching this afternoon was that a lot of pups and handlers both have a desire for greater education tied to pup play in general. What are some topics that you think would be like really important for folks to talk about as they first immerse themselves into pup play?
I think it would just be, for me, would just be able to find a community that you feel comfortable in and someone that you can trust and not have to worry about being taken advantage of.
Yeah, I would definitely agree, especially not being taken advantage of. Well, I would say for the most part, everyone that I've ever met is pretty safe. You never know that one person you might come across who might try and pressure you to do something that you're not into. And thankfully, I feel like being a pup, you have more of a community to point out these folks who are not safe for the community. I can tell you right now, I have connections across the United States. These people have pointed out, like, saying, like, these people are unsafe for the community. We need to either re-educate them or not exile or cancel them, but definitely try and inform them more of what is safe and what isn't safe.
So speaking of safety, Adam, I know in our little pre-chat, we talked a little bit about how the Moshes have been focused on safety. Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
So basically, as part of Blue Max, we provide the safe space. So that means the padded floors, and then having water available, having the treats available, and also having the, not staff, but the members watching out for the whoever's in the puppy mosh, just to make sure they're being taken care of and having fun and just a sense of being cared for, and just so they can not worry about that, so they can just focus on just being there in the present and experience that with the other pups. And I think it's been a great time having them and giving them the space they need to just explore what they like. And yeah.
In terms of, you know, updating the bylaws as well and member designations, what has that looked like for you all?
Yeah, so with any leather club, I think it's important to evolve with the times. So like Ed said, at one time, leather clubs and just the culture was very rigid with the rules and stuff like that. And although there is an importance to that, but we also need to, you know, meet people where they're at. So with the puppy community, like Ed was saying, like, A lot of them don't have handlers and stuff like that. They just want to explore what they like and just meet people that have similar interests. And with the club putting on those moshes, we definitely want to see more of them. And we've been thinking about ways to incorporate different pups into our club. And we have different membership statuses. So as part of the leather club, we have our full members. So they have the voting rights and all that. Auxiliaries, which they're still part of the club but can't necessarily make every function, so less requirements. And then we have honorary and alumni, which is based off of years of service. And recently we just added the kennel club designation for our auxiliary. So with that, if a pup is interested in the leather club and just wants to hang out and show the support, we have shirts available and dog tags so they can wear those proud. I know there's no pockets and stuff like that, so it's nice to just wear that around the neck and trying to reach out to that community and just show that we're accepting and that we're here for them.
So one thing I'm curious about, what advice would you guys have for new pups as they start to get involved?
Definitely get involved in the community. If they, you know, see someone and that's a pup, just reach out. And I think the community is definitely very welcoming, and then they can get involved in doing different different activities, getting in chats, and all those type of things.
Yeah, and I would agree, get involved, reach out to another pub or so, try and find out events of what's going on. You'd never know what's right around the corner. Granted, that right around the corner might be a few months from now, but it still doesn't hurt to at least ask. Plus, another piece of advice, get knee pads. You need them for moshes. They will make your life so much better.
So, are there, you know, in the meantime, since in-person events aren't really a thing, is there like an online community that you could point folks to that might be a way to keep active during these trying times?
Absolutely. So right now, not to kind of divulge from Blue Max, but there is a Pups and Handler group Facebook page. It's just called St. Louis Pups and Handlers. They also happen to have a Telegram group that anyone can join, whether you are a pup, a handler, somewhere in between, or not on the scale of that at all. It's a great way to just meet other pups and just hang out. I will say you do get bombarded with messages, especially at the most random times of the day about the most random subjects, but it is quite a lot of fun to just kind of stay involved with everyone. I know especially after the pandemic, there will be a pause in the park is what they call it, where they go out to other events. They are generally pretty open to most people, but much like Blue Max, they heavily revolve around each other. So I know they do try and work with Blue Max and to make sure that they're not overlapping their events.
All right, well, if you're interested in pups or joining Blue Max as a Kennel Club member, please reach out to our vice president. We can follow us on Blue Max CC. We are on Facebook and Instagram, and we have a website.
What's the website?
BlueMaxCC.org. And yeah, just wanted to thank you both for coming here, Zach and Ed. Really appreciate it. And hearing your experiences with pup play.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you.
It's been a pleasure.